Recorded sound is mediated sound. It's mediated through a technology that requires its users to adapt their musical practices and habits in a variety of ways.
That's from Capturing Sound by Mark Katz. As the standard for what people considered a professional recording increased over the years, so did the costs of what it would take to make a recording of that quality. So as the need for extremely high-end studios, equipment, producers, and engineers increased, the product of all of that almost exclusively became, well, a product. And a byproduct of that commodification of music was that the industry that was creating those products started to apply much more stringent cost-benefit analysis of the music that they were producing. Now, this approach, of course, is not unique to the music industry. Almost any corporation with shareholders to answer to will do everything they can to avoid spending any money unless they absolutely have to. Since recording studios charge by the amount of time that you spend in them, often by the hour, though it's not unheard of for very high-end studios to charge in even smaller amounts of time, one of the most expedient ways for a record label to reduce their outgoing costs is simply to reduce the amount of time spent in the studio. This led to the development of many different recording techniques, which primarily have the aim of reducing the amount of time it takes in order to get a polished, professional-sounding recording. Now, a few of these are quite simple, such as using a click track, that is, a metronome that keeps a steady beat, so that if you record multiple takes, you know that the tempo is going to match from one to the other. This makes it much easier if someone makes a mistake to go back and edit just that part of the performance, rather than having to redo the entire thing. Slightly more complicated is something like an ADT, or automatic double tracker. With this, a single take is duplicated onto another track, but with its speed slightly modulated. This gives the impression of a second track being recorded, without the need of the performer to actually produce it again. Eric Clapton famously used this on his guitar solo for the Beatles classic, While My Guitar Gently Weeps. And then you get into the stuff that can really get into the heart of any performance and change almost any facet of it. What The Simpsons famously called the studio magic button, and with an industry secret for close to a decade, the infamous auto-tune. This clip from Glenn Fricker's viral video, The Fans Deserve Better, sums it up pretty nicely.
The fans deserve better. As a young metal fan, the records I laid my hard-earned cash down for didn't have auto-tune. The vocalist had to nail his part. There was no time alignment for drums. Drummers had to nail it or go home. Hell, back then, even Lars Ulrich had to be able to play. Then, in 1997, an engineer working for the Exxon Corporation developed a technology that would become autotune. And let's be clear here. The corporation that's responsible for destroying the Alaskan coastline is also responsible for destroying music. And let's be completely honest here, this is exactly what's happening. Music is being destroyed because the human element is being edited out. Lame, weak performances are being polished to be passable. Superior performances are being edited to be bland, stale, and technically perfect. Music is being altered not because it's necessary, but merely because it can be done. Beat detective and other time alignment methods are being abused so much these days that a skilled drummer really isn't needed anymore. Why practice when you can sample replace weak hits and have R2-D2 play the drums back perfectly aligned to a tempo? And there are some amazing sample sets out there. The only problem is everyone is using them! This is making music bland, stale, and boring. And the really important question that nobody seems to be asking is any of this digital alteration making music better?
Across the industry, the use of the same tools in order to achieve drum replacement, time alignment, perfect mastering levels, really start to push music towards homogeneity, as all the individual quirks of each musician are corrected out of the recording process. What used to be a singer or musician's style is now seen by the industry as an error. But an entirely new era was about to start for the music industry.
The home computer revolution of the 90s and 2000s
puts recording software in the hands of millions. GarageBand comes included on every Mac, and suddenly everyone at home has the same tools as the professionals, albeit without the incredibly expensive recording studios to use those tools in. But this, combined with the studios using less and less studio time, makes it far easier for home studios to produce products that are comparable to professional recordings. The big labels are skimping on time, the home studios are skimping on equipment costs, and somewhere in the middle, you get a recording that sounds pretty similar. This balancing of the playing field leads to artists being able to record their own music, not having to rely on a record label, release it on their own through myriad streams online. It makes recorded sound less of a viable commodity, but more of a personal expression and advertisement that an artist can take and produce and distribute on their own terms. But things have not swung round completely. Because these bedroom producers are still having to compensate for not having fantastic studios to record in, they're relying ever more on those studio techniques that were developed in order to reduce time. So drums are being aligned to a grid to make sure that every hit is exactly on the beat. Vocals are being corrected to make sure that everything's in exactly the right key. Guitar riffs are being copy and pasted throughout the song so that someone only has to play it right once. And again, we end up with a final product that is overproduced and lacking that ephemeral human quality. But that's something that people don't give up easily on. So now you see a backlash against that, against using any sort of studio trickery other than some microphones in front of some musicians. So here's Jack White explaining his ethos in the backlash against digital recording.
Okay, and that's the difference between the way recording was for 100 years up until just recently in the last couple of decades, where it became digital and computerized, where you could take 300 takes if you wanted to.
Yeah.
So you're feeling that old style pressure, which I think helped a lot of amazing moments happen, amazing songs happen because of that pressure. Yeah. So it's amazing that so many people have felt this way too about, in the last 10 years or so, this revival of vinyl has taken such a huge, amazing turn.
And at this juncture, music really seems to be existing in one of two main forms. Either heavily produced music, where the aim of correcting everything to be perfect, so it's in tune, on time, maximum volume, is the main goal. Or essentially recordings of live performances, either direct in a studio or more commonly taken from the soundboard at a live concert. Or, in these days of the pandemic, with audio running directly to a computer, whilst a video recording runs simultaneously so that you can see that what's being played is what you're hearing. What you're not getting a lot of these days is a balance, a middle ground, somewhere between these two extremes. this is something that used to be quite common in the 70s. A band would set up all their instruments and they'd play a song together as a band to get the basic track to form their album from. So you have that essence of a band playing together, making music together. But at the same time, each of those instruments is going off to a different recording channel on the mixing desk. Now from here, you could punch in bits if you happen to have a particularly egregious mistake. You could put on a second guitar track in order to widen the stereo field. Basically, do things that take the understanding that a studio record is not a live performance. And the things that you do in order to create the best recording in a live setting versus in an album setting are not necessarily the same things. John Pfeiffer is quoted as saying,
"A recording is one thing, a concert is another, and never the twain shall meet."
And I'd like to test that theory. Using modern technology, the equipment that we have today, I'd like to set out to record three different versions of a song. One, a pure, raw, single take, taken from a mixing desk without any sort of editing. Another, using that raw take as the basis, but then using those individual tracks, using the tools that we have at our disposal in order to create an album that sounds as big as it should. And then taking that same bass, but producing it to the level that most producers these days seem to like. Remove the drums, replace them with MIDI. Copy and paste riffs, auto-tune vocals and guitar solos. And then I'd like to see which of those people have a better response to. I know which one I think will have the best response, but I'd also be very intrigued if it turns out to be one of the others.